Let's get it. Hey, it's Chuck. We are not bemoaning the noon kickoff. We are now owning it. It's a badge of honor. We're the lunatic fringe that defines our coach's legacy when it comes to this game. They don't get to define that outside the family. Dude, we're cut from a different cloth for Ohioans. He's got it all, man. He's even got the jaw. You know the jaw? You see that jaw and you're just like, yeah, man, that's a dude. Do I want Michigan to beat Oklahoma? No way in hell. I don't know what world I'm living in. This is insane to me. And if you saw my outburst, I apologize. It's showtime now. Welcome to Chuck on Bucks. We are finally here on the eve of the season starting for the Ohio State Buckeyes. We got a game tomorrow. The winningest program of the century, the Ohio State Buckeyes, take the field under Coach Ryan Day, the 137th season of Ohio State football, the 104th at the Shoe. And Ryan Day, season number 8 for him. Over his, I mean, we can call it illustrious career at this point. Take a look at this graphic from Ryan Day's era as Ohio State, the best offense and best defense in college football over Alabama, Oregon, Notre Dame, Georgia. Look at Iowa and Wisconsin up there in total defense since 2019. How about that? Now, normally in the pregame show, what I do is talk about the matchup and things that Ohio State needs to do to win the game. Not going to be like that today because Ohio State is playing essentially Ohio State. The only thing we can really talk about when we talk about the opponent, Ball State, is number one, never played Ohio State. First matchup ever. Number two, Keldrick Luster, their quarterback. A kid from Texas who thinks he's got a really bright future as a shorter quarterback like Kyler Murray, who is from a town close to him. But this guy got kind of brutalized on the internet over the week, as this is not a picture of Keldrick Luster, but it's the picture that's been widely circulated of him, listed at 5'10", 250 pounds, and someone took his team photo and made him look a little huskier. This is his actual team photo, where you can see he's much more svelte than the one that's been leaked around the internet. So shout out to Keldrick, man. That's not fair. I don't like to see that at all. Keldrick and his Ball State Cardinals have their hands full tomorrow. That's for sure. We got our pin for the opening game. These pins I told you I just ordered the other day. They're already here from the Ohio State team shop. They came in like 2 days. You know what didn't come in 2 days and still isn't here? My Riley Pettijohn jersey, which I wanted before the first game. Really want to see what those sleeves look like with the shiny material next to some of the other ones that I got with the Buckeye stripes. You know, we talked a lot about the new turf. Ryan Day said it was Jeremiah Smith approved. It's beautiful. I can't wait to see the players on it. Instead of being about 2 inches thick, like the grass portion of it, like the old stuff, it's now 2.5 inches thick. The old stuff had a padding underlay. This one doesn't. So 2.5 inch blades of grass, right? Monofilament, each blade of grass. And then there's a thicker layer of the rubber filling. And the players reportedly say it's a fast track and it's softer when you go down on it. So that's good. What else? You can also paint it. So if you want to change it by painting it, you can do that. If you want to remove and put in a whole new strip, like a whole new end zone, you can do that as well, which we'll probably see for the blackout game, which according to my trusty new pins, I know I'm a dork. Leave me alone. According to my new pins, the blackout game, the tunnel vision uniform is going to be worn for the Northwestern week, which we'll probably see black end zones. Maybe if we're lucky, even a black block O in the middle of the field. But for tomorrow's game, what they decided to do was put a little paint in the end zone. And what would you use in the very first game? Well, a symbol that is iconic throughout Ohio State lore. This is what they decided to do in the end zone for game one. And I just love it. It's beautiful. You got the Buckeye stripes there. It's obviously a big theme this year as they make their return after 20 years gone. And it's everywhere. You know, in the tunnel where the players walk out, they made the whole wall, the Buckeye stripes, all the way down. Big Ten Media Days, we saw Ryan Day, Jalen McClain, Jeremiah Smith, Julian Sain walking around with one of these. It wasn't as dorky as mine. One of these pins, and it was just the Buckeye stripes. That's all it was, and it's instantly identifiable. Every other team had their team logo. The Buckeyes had the Buckeye stripes, and everybody knows what that is. And look, what's done is done. We got them back, and I feel good about it. but still it blows my mind that we had to go 20 years without him for no reason. And I've done entire shows about this. In fact, someone was asking me in the mailbag episode that we got coming up to maybe go over and put together stages of my background because they wanted to see how much it's changed behind me since I started. So I went back to week one, and week one of this show, I did a show about not having the stripes and wanting them back. And back then, before this happened, I mean, there was a lot of people that were pushing back saying, I like it for a special occasion, for the playoffs, for the national championship game. I like also having something that is unique for a special occasion, something that's cool that you bring out when it's like, all right, we need it all tonight, but not a staple of the uniform. I'd prefer a staple stays a staple and something else is that special thing, but they're back now and I can't wait to see them on the field. Anyway, don't have my Riley Pettyjohn jersey to celebrate. Jim Tressel going in the Ring of Honor as he will join Woody Hayes and Paul Brown tomorrow. And that'll be, I think, in the first quarter, the first play stoppage is when that happens. Mo Claret, before the game, will be ringing the victory bell. So the boys from Youngstown back at it, at the Shoe, going to be awesome. The game doesn't start till 12:30. Of course, it's Senior Day. Going to honor the seniors, and Earl Little was asked about Senior Day, and he kind of smiled wryly, obviously, as he's, you know, playing his first game ever at Ohio State, and he said, you know, shout out to the seniors. I'm just kind of getting ready to play. The line for tomorrow's game, 50.5 points, and, you know, what can you possibly learn when playing a team as a 50.5 point favorite? And normally in the pregame show, what I do is go over 10 questions that I have about the matchup. Usually it's a lot about the matchup. There's not really a matchup tomorrow. This is more just like, what are we going to see out of Ohio State with Texas looming week two? Well, let's get into it. First, if you've not yet subscribed to the show, we'd really appreciate that subscription. If you haven't set those alerts, that's also a good thing you might want to do is entering now into the third season at Juck on Bucks. I'm going to try to grind harder than ever before this year, stay on top of stories quicker, and set those alarms because they'll come, you know, whenever there's breaking news, I'm going to try to get something out. You can also join me at Substack and definitely at Buckeye Insiders, the Buckeye Insiders YouTube channel, the Buckeye Insiders website. On the Buckeye Insiders YouTube channel, I know that I told you that there was going to be an hour delay from the stadium as to when you can go live. And then I told you, never mind, we're going to go live immediately after the game. Well, now I'm here to tell you again, it's going to be an hour delay. So you can expect any post-game show you like to watch. If they're going live from the stadium, it's going to be after an hour after the game ends. And that's fine. Gives us time to watch Ryan Day, digest what he has to say in the press conference afterwards, go over all the stats, and give a more comprehensive show. So I'll be on the field going live. The countdown will be set. As soon as that hour's up, we'll come on live. I'll start. I'll lead off the show, hop in the comment section, we'll be interactive, and then I will throw it over to Tom and Tony, where they will be in the press conference room, and I will continue on in the chat with you guys. So join us after the game over at Buckeye Insiders. Should be a lot of fun, and then I'll drive back home for my two-hour drive, which will give me an opportunity to put together my full post-game show while my wife's car drives me home. And then we'll be ready to go for the Juck on Bucks post-game show, which I might do this year on Sundays live for home games. So we might just come on Sunday before the NFL games in a regular week. No NFL games this Sunday. But maybe we'll just plan for, I don't know, like 11 o'clock live wrap-up show on Sundays. I think that's what we'll do at least this week anyway. Anyway, let's get to this game. And Ball State, I think this one, these guys are really bad. Number one, they're like the, I don't know, 125th ranked team in the country in the FBS. And I think this one has like Grambling potential from last year. And what did we see in the Grambling game last year? We saw the entire bench clear for Ohio State. And I don't mean in a brawl. I mean, everybody got on the field. Give me just a moment. My contact is like floating here. All right. Crisis averted. Last year, Grambling, everybody got in the game, and we saw some freshmen really pop in that game. Bo Jackson popped in that game. Riley Pettyjohn popped in that game. Isaiah West popped in that game, scored a touchdown. who are the freshman stars that we're going to see break out against Ball State? I can only imagine we're going to see quite a few, man. But I'm going to give you my pick for the game first, because I had to do this for our Buckeye Insider staff picks. And I think that we're talking about a game here where, with this backup quarterback situation the way it is, Ohio State's going to be running the full offense all the way through the game. There's no holding back. And that usually means a lot of points. And I think that this might be the high water point mark for points for the Buckeyes of the year. I'm going to go with 56-6. So 56 points for the Buckeyes tomorrow, the high score of the year. Now, question number one of our questions that we usually ask 10 questions pregame, answer them in the postgame show. Obviously, Art Smith, question number one. This, to me, is the biggest topic of the day. A new offensive coordinator in his first game is always going to be the biggest topic. How different does this offense look from 2025? When we talk about Ryan, you know what? We couldn't handle it. I look like a double nerd now with my glasses and a pin. If you're listening in audio format, I'm wearing glasses and I have a lapel pin on a sweatshirt. So anyway, Ryan Day, coordinator number three in his career now at Ohio State, in kind of rapid succession here, and a very different relationship in all three of these. When we're talking about number one with Chip Kelly, his mentor, then Brian Hartline, his mentee. Those are very, very different dynamics between a head coach and the mentor, the head coach and the mentee. And number three, in Art Smith, we've got a guy who Ryan Day respects as a peer, right? The same relationship you can see that he has with Matt Patricia. These guys to him, these are peers. These are NFL head coaches. And I think it brings a different amount of respect and hands off of the offense to Art Smith from Ryan Day. Now, I think Art has the full keys to the castle. It's week one. You got Texas next week. Do you see an accurate representation of what the offense is going to look like moving forward in week one? Ryan Day was asked about holding plays back and essentially, like, how do you weigh what you hold back in week one with Texas looming, knowing that you've also got to practice in a real game situation what you're trying to do? And he essentially said, you can't get too cute, man. You got to play football. And I like that answer. I mean, obviously, they're going to hold some stuff back, right? But the offense is going to look like the offense. Now, we are under the impression, after watching Tyler Bowen last year, who was the run game coordinator, and essentially they ran maybe 50-50 zone scheme, that Art Smith, who in his career has primarily run about 75 to 85% as a wide zone guy, that we're going to see a big change here in the look of the running game. Now, will that be the case? We're not 100% sure yet, but most likely. Will there be any point in the game where Art Smith adjusts the tempo of the game? I would normally say, like, looking at the Texas game, there will be situations during the game where you could say the game flow dictates right here that you could go a little faster or you could slow it down. Not going to be the case in a blowout game. So there's not going to be any part of the game where, like, this is a situation where it would call for that other than, you know, right before the half. But nonetheless, will we see him mess with the tempo at all? If he doesn't, it doesn't tell us anything because the situation didn't call for it. But if he does, it tells us something big. If he does, it means that what we've seen the last couple of years is going to change. And that would be just the most welcome thing that I think I could see of this entire day, except for one thing. If we see him adjust the tempo, play with the tempo a little bit, or maybe even get crazy and play with the snap count once or twice, that would be amazing. In my opinion, this Ohio State offense this year needs to gain at least like a half a possession a game on average. They just need another possession. There was a couple games last year and it just felt like, man, like they just possessed the ball so few times. I think the Washington game, they had three possessions in the first half because you had a fumbled punt return. Brandon Ennis fumbled a punt return. You had three possessions in the first half. It's just nuts. You need the ball more. You need more shots. You need more bites at the apple. But if Art Smith plays with the tempo at all, definitely something I'm looking at, hoping to see. And then we can say that probably the rest of the season we can count on. It's not going to be the slowest moving offense in the FBS, which, you know, it doesn't need to be fast. It doesn't even need to be faster than average. I don't think you need to be mess with the tempo too much to get another half a possession a game, which I think they need. So that would be huge. How about Art's tight ends? Question number two. How involved are these guys? How often are they in 12 personnel? They were heavy tight end crew last year, played five deep in the tight end room, and kind of the mantra and what they said was, look, we've got all these guys. They all deserve to play. And with those five guys, they all played. And you ran a lot of tight end heavy stuff. This year's crew, Ryan Day was asked about the other day, and he has made pretty clear his top three in no particular order. He says Nate Roberts, Mason Williams, that is the order, 1-2, and then Bennett Christian, number three. Last year, when you had two guys in Max Clair, a second rounder, and Will Kaczmarek, a third rounder, and then freshman Nate Roberts is your 1-2-3. Well, I guess Nate really wasn't the third tight end, but with those guys at 1 and 2, and you look at this crew here with Nate Roberts in your number two and Mason Williams, the transfer from Ohio University, there's a pretty big talent gap. And this is just, I think Nate is going to be a really good tight end who's going to have some of the best of Max Clair and some of the best of Will Kaczmarek. I think Mason Williams is also kind of a versatile guy, where Max Clair, Will Kaczmarek each had their role as the blocker and in the receiver. Nate Roberts, Mason Williams, both a little more of a mix, a little more well-rounded, which is good. But I just think the overall talent level of what you have in this tight end room as your number three guys, Bennett Christian, it just doesn't feel quite as good as last year. And it's definitely not as deep as Ryan Day said. Your number four is Max LeBlanc. So knowing that this is not as good of a crew, right? It's not an outstanding tight end crew. Like they felt like last year's was an outstanding tight end crew. How much do we see out of these tight ends? A lot of Pittsburgh fans have been telling us all along, expect to see them a ton. I'm not sure. So I'm really interested to see how often are they in 12 personnel? How often are they heavier than that? And that'll be really interesting to watch out for in game number one. Question number three. For this game to be successful, for me to feel good about coming out of this game offensively, this offensive line and the lineup's going to be at left tackle, Ian Moore, at left guard, Luke Montgomery, at center, Carson Hinsman, right guard, Austin Sereveld, right tackle, Phil Daniels. That'll be the starting lineup for the year. You have got in that group five NFL dudes. Ian Moore is for sure an NFL dude. Absolutely. For sure, Luke Montgomery, for sure, Carson Hinsman, for sure, Austin Sereveld. These guys are all likely NFL starters and hopefully for a long time. And then Phil Daniels, if he continues on the trajectory he's on, maybe not at tackle, maybe at guard. I think you got five NFL linemen on this crew and a couple of them pretty high level NFL guys at some point. That's really exciting, man. That's really exciting. And for that caliber of player, at Ohio State, when you're playing a team like Ball State, I want to see them pounded into submission. I want to see this team be able to run the ball at will, look sharp, look crisp, and really pound them with attitude. I want to see attitude out of these guys. I want to see them look like they looked against Penn State in 2024 on that final drive where they ran the ball 12 straight times, were whooping and hollering. That's what I want to see against Texas with Luke Montgomery throwing the horns down. Like, I want to see these guys play nasty. Now, they know each other great, right? You got four guys that played together. One of them's been like their little brother in the room for a couple of years. This group should be tight, and they should play with a lot of emotion, and I think that's what Art Smith wants to see out of them. We heard Carson Hinsman talking about the best ever. Like, that's what they've been talking about. The energy is palpable under Art Smith. If we see these guys come out, not just dominate, but dominate with attitude, it is going to feel great going into that Texas game. I mean, I'm going to feel fantastic about that game if that's what we see out of this offensive line. Question number four, and I think this one's really interesting. Where is JJ? Now, I don't expect Jeremiah to play a ton, which I have mixed feelings about. I tend to to make my analysis sometimes as, let me rephrase that. I root for things as a fan. I don't root for things as a general manager or a head coach. Now, the general manager or the head coach, from their perspective, they're going to look at this situation and say, we're playing a really bad team. We don't need Jeremiah at all. We don't want to risk injury. It's a long season. When I look at this game, I want to see Jeremiah have 300 yards of receptions and 5 touchdowns and start the Heisman campaign. You know, like, I don't look at it from their point of view, though I understand it. And I certainly want to see the young guys too. We know Jeremiah's not playing much. But what I want to know is, where is he and who is he on the field with? Because when we look at Jeremiah and all the talk that they've had about wanting more yards after catch, what Jeremiah can do, where is he lining up? Who's he lining up with? Where was he last year? 632 snaps last year. He was out wide at the X, 519 of those snaps. 106 of those were in the slot and 7 in the backfield. So I'm not good at math real quick, right? You might be, but you can tell me what percentage that is. The point is, I think that we're going to see a lot more of those this upcoming year of him in the slot, him mixing it up. And I suspect that we are going to see more creative ways for him to get the football. So probably more in the backfield as well. And I also suspect that his backup at X, Chris Henry Jr., there will be a package with Chris Henry Jr., Jeremiah Smith, Devin McEwen, all on the field together. And Devin McEwen, another guy who Ryan Day just kind of flippantly said something as though it wasn't really a big deal the other day, that many, yes, people around here, and many of them will tell you, he's as good as we've had. Now, nobody knows what a first-round wide receiver in college football, behind the scenes, in a program, looks like better in college football than Ryan Day. Think about it. Nobody, not a single guy. Not a single guy in college football has seen more of him, because Brian Hartline's not looking at one right now. And Ryan Day is looking at an additional one in Devin McEwen. So he's got more under his belt than Brian Hartline even. Nobody has seen more in college football than Ryan Day. So if he said he's as good as anyone been around here, that to me says first rounder. So now you're looking back at another Carnell, Emeka, and JJ with 3 first rounders on the field at wide receiver together, because Chris Henry Jr. is about as safe as a first rounder as you could have. And that would be pretty awesome. So I want to see that package. Don't know if we'll see it tomorrow, but that sure would be great. The good news is, I think we will see 8 wide receivers tomorrow as we move on to question number 5. What do the wide receiver routes look like? You know, all the talk about yards after catch the last couple of years, very, very stagnant, a whole lot of Hank, curl flat, both sides of the field, not guys in motion, not a lot of rub routes, just very stagnant kind of stuff. And Ryan Day talked in the offseason about Cortez Hankton, number one, having very strong opinions on how to get this done, more yards after catch. And they've worked a lot on this. In the spring, it looked different. I don't think we saw a whole lot that would give me an impression one way or the other in the preseason as much as in the spring. I think the preseason was a little more when the fans were there and the media was there, like they were a little more buttoned up as to what they weren't going to show. At any rate, they've told us, I think, enough that we know what we're going to see are some more rub routes, some more crossers. We're going to see some more guys getting the ball quick in motion while they're moving, trying to get some more yards after the catch. How about number 6? And this is our first player. I think this is so important. And did Bo Atkinson's work pay off? Bo Atkinson, when we talked just the other day with Landon about this on the show, I think Kenyatta Jackson needs a really solid defensive end across from him to get max Kenyatta Jackson. And what they're expecting here is a big jump from Bo. In fact, they've already seen a big jump from Bo Atkinson, or else Bo Jackson wouldn't have earned this starting role, right? Bo Atkinson was a guy who was losing snaps throughout the year last year. This is a guy who started off 35 snaps in the Texas game and steady dropping. I think he had about 20 for Wisconsin. You get to Purdue, there's like 12. You get to Indiana, there's 5, and doesn't play against Miami. I mean, it was an arrow line, this trend line straight down. And that was for Zion Grady coming in and taking those snaps, who was a quality freshman, but he wasn't setting the world on fire. It was more Bo losing those snaps than somebody taking them because he wasn't getting it done. And now we can see the physical development. They've talked about the athletic training and the flexibility, athleticism that they're trying to add to his hips and everything else. And that's because he was a very stiff athlete. I don't think it's going to take us long to see if Bo looks a little bit different or not out there. I'm not expecting him to be a player who puts up big numbers this year. I'm just expecting him to hold it down. I mean, you could have put together, a little clip last year of, that doesn't look good with Bo Atkinson. And I'm expecting that that's not what we see this year. At least I'm hoping for it. And certainly they're expecting it, or else he wouldn't be the starter. And if he is, then they made a big mistake not bringing someone in, unless one of the younger guys in Zion Grady or Epi Sitanile are ready. I think both will play a good amount this year. And I'm also thinking Kari Wilder is going to play quite a bit this year. But I think for the most part, Bo Atkinson is a huge hinge point on this season. Like that right there, it's kind of non-negotiable. He's got to be good. Doesn't need to be great, but he's got to be good to get the most out of your best defensive lineman. Number 7, do you have 4 guys in the middle of the defensive line that are starters, or do you have 4 guys that are not quite good enough to be starters? It's a question I've heard asked. I've made it pretty clear. When we talk about the interior of this defensive line, we don't know who's starting, but we know you got a 4-pack in John Walker, Edrick Houston, Will Smith Jr., James Smith, who are going to be rotating quite a bit. There's no definitive 1-2. I think they all bring a little bit different to their position. James Smith at 3-tech, I think, is most likely to be the one to have a potential breakout season. But if Edrick is that guy, certainly won't surprise me. John Walker, been getting better and better at Ohio State after having a good season last year at UCF. And Will Smith Jr., somehow quietly kept, had a really good year last year. And we have seen him put on some more size. He's got some good quicks, some good moves. We heard Josh Padilla talking about him last year, how difficult it was going from Cade McDonald to blocking Will Smith Jr. He was saying that in the preseason. I wasn't buying it. And then Will came out and had a really good year. So with John Walker, Will Smith Jr., primarily rotating at 1-tech, and then James Smith and Edrick at 3-tech. Again, do you got 4 starting caliber dudes, or do you got, 2 positions where one guy hasn't separated himself, and that's a bad thing? I think it's a good thing. I don't think we're going to get a great vibe on that tomorrow, but I think what we should see are a couple of big-time plays and definitely some big running game plays from that crew tomorrow. But this right here, the Bo Atkinson discussion, if they got another defensive end who can free up Kenyatta, and these 4 in the middle, to me, when I talk about national championships, it's always down when you strip almost everything away, you have got to have a defensive line that makes a big difference. A defensive line has to make a big difference in those big time games. And you look at the games just last year that Ohio State lost. If Miami doesn't have that defensive line, Indiana's defensive line doesn't perform the way they did, the Buckeyes perhaps win those games. It's always about the defensive line. And this defensive line has questions. Do they have answers? That's what we're waiting to see. I think we'll see at Texas. We'll know for sure, in my opinion, if this is a national championship caliber defensive line. But we'll get some hints tomorrow with Ball State. And number 8, are we watching the first game of a young first rounder's career in Jay Timmons making his first start, most likely tomorrow, as a freshman? We've talked about the other guys that have came in and started as a nickel, and Dante Whitner, Malcolm Jenkins, Antoine Winfield, Nate Clements, and here's Jay Timmons, and here's Earl Little on Jay Timmons from this past week.
Soon as he came in, you know, we do a lot of competitive stuff, you know, in the weight room as well as on the field. And just seeing his whole mindset and, you know, the tenacity he brings, like, it's crazy. I never seen it from a freshman. His willingness to, you know, come up and tackle and thump you. Also, he's a great cover corner as well. He has all the tangibles, you know, to play. Like you said, for the freshman, your mindset, it has to be there, especially at a prestigious school like Ohio State. Your mindset has to be at the top, you know, every single day. His mindset, he has a pro style mindset already at a young age, and just the aggressiveness he plays with and his passion for the game, that sets him apart from a lot of people.
I think Earl made it pretty clear there. Three separate questions, three answers that were pretty emphatic that he is a believer in Jay Timmons, and we've heard nothing but that. And honestly, as much as we've talked about Jay Timmons here on this show, from before he committed to Ohio State to the time he flipped to the end of the recruiting cycle until these guys got on campus, which was a lot, I don't even think we talked about enough here. And I am so excited to see what Jay Timmons does out there. Now, does he get over aggressive? Does he make mistakes? Does he get out of position? I feel much more comfortable as we move on to question number 9 with him out there with a guy like Peyton Pierce, as Peyton Pierce makes his big debut as the quarterback of the Ohio State defense, the leader, the captain, the green dot guy, filling in some enormous shoes as you lose Sonny and Arvell last year. And he played really good against Miami the last time we saw him. Now, granted, just 10 snaps. But I do want to give you this little number, a 99.9 run grade via PFF in that game. That is the highest I've ever seen with the 10 snap minimum. Now, at this point, through the offseason and the conversation about Peyton, and this happens at times when you've got guys coming up from behind that were really talented and highly ranked and are doing well, and we can say Riley Pettijohn and TJ Alfred. Look, his name is pronounced Pettijohn. Okay. I don't know why I have an issue. I have like a brain, like a circuit short when I say that. It's not Pettijohn, it's Pettijohn. Okay. So with him and TJ, obviously everybody's really excited about them. And there's a lot of people who would like to see one of them supplant Peyton right now because they feel like Peyton isn't quite the athlete with that kind of juice to be able to not be a tackling machine. I think most people, the ones who doubt Peyton a little bit, think he can be a tackling machine. It's the plays they don't think he can get to. It's the coverage grade or the coverage aspect of it. And I think there's a big disconnect between that section of the fan base and the coaching staff, which is not unusual. There's usually a couple guys like that on the team. But in this particular instance, that coach is James Laurinaitis. And we've heard James Laurinaitis talk about Peyton Pierce for a couple of years now. And when he talks about him, the praise is so effusive. It's like there's a twinkle in his eye, is how I've always characterized it. And James talks about playing with his lack of athleticism compared to some other guys and how he could out-prepare everybody, that when he was looking at a play and this other linebacker was looking at a play, he knew that he would get there faster, even though he wasn't as fast or as quick or as sudden, because he did everything he needed to do in the classroom, and he was going to get there first by out-diagnosing you. And he believes Peyton is the same way. And if he says that, I believe him. It's just that simple. There's nobody that I trust more when it comes to linebacker discussion, play, who's the best, than James Laurinaitis. Nobody. Even though I also, in 2024, wanted to see Arvell Reese playing more. And in 2023, I wanted to see Cody Simon playing more. I hope, now, he has since said that he should have played Cody more in 2023. But I hope that this year, when we talk about these top two linebackers with Peyton and Christian Allegro, we think we're going to see a lot of TJ and Riley. I just hope that he doesn't get settled in and just say, okay, we're good, and have the intention of bringing them in, but then it doesn't happen as much as he originally planned, which is sometimes what happens with coaches. Because I really want to see those guys quite a bit. We'll certainly see them tomorrow. That'll be exciting. But I do want to show you something that I went and looked up here before the show. Again, I bring this up because it's very difficult to have. It's really the only thing without seeing Ohio State's internal grades that we can point to as a metric that is a number that somebody sat down and looked at every play, and it's PFF. But bear with me here. Coverage grades from Ohio State linebackers going back to the 2023 season with Tommy and Steele, then Sonny and A8 in 2024, and Cody Simon in 2023. Here's what the graphic looks like. All these guys put together, the linebackers of 23, 24, and 25. Spit it out, buddy. That was a bad setup. But here's what those linebackers look like in those 3 years. If we just look at their grades in order via coverage, this is just coverage, because this is where a lot of people think that Peyton really struggles. And I think they think this just because they think that that's kind of the way it should be based on the way these guys look. Sonny Styles in 2025 with the best coverage score for any of those linebackers, 86.9. Number two on that list, Peyton Pierce in 2025 at 75.4. Cody Simon in 23, 73.8. Cody in 24, 72.7. Arvell Reese in 24, 68.7. Sonny in 25, 67.8. Steele in 23, 64.5. Arvell in 25, 56.7. And Tommy in 2023, with a 52.7. I do think that's important to point out, because a lot of people have been throwing Peyton in with Tommy when it comes to that. So when you look at the difference there, Peyton in 25, 75.4, he played, I believe, like 250 snaps. So a good enough sample size. And then Tommy in 23 with 52.7. That seems like it would be a pretty big difference. So just a little nugget that I wanted to share there. Our final question, Brock and Chris, Brock Boyd, Chris Henry Jr., the most fascinating story of the offseason. Do we get to see it in a game? I cannot wait. And if we do, I think the shoe's going to just go bananas, because these guys have been so discussed all offseason, these two freshman wide receivers that weren't really the two everybody thought that we were going to be talking about. You thought it was going to be the two five-stars, Chris Henry Jr., Jaquaden Guilford. Instead, it's Brock, which makes it an even more fun story, because you do got the enormous five-star that's been a five-star since he was 15, and then the smaller kid who's kind of worked his way up, knows everything about the position, and just grinds. It's a cool story. If we can see those two go off, it'll be awesome. So to reiterate, number one, what do we see different from Art Smith? Number two, the tight ends. Number three, do we have a soul-destroying offensive line performance? Number four, where's JJ? Number five, wide receiver routes. Number six, Bo Atkinson, do we see the improvement? Number seven, defensive line on the interior. Do you have four starters or four guys who just aren't quite good enough to be starters? Number eight, Jay Timmons. Are we seeing the first game of a first rounder in his very first time? Very first opportunity. Number nine, Peyton Pierce, the quarterback of the defense. And number 10, Brock and Chris Henry Jr. So, cannot wait to see it. I'll be at the game. You'll be at the game. If you see me, make sure you holler. Definitely please subscribe to the show. But we're not done yet, as we got to move on and talk a little national college football scene, as we've already seen one big-time game Thursday night. Colorado, Georgia Tech, came down to the wire. We got to see Fernando Mendoza's little brother, Alberto, at Georgia Tech. And, of course, the obligatory shot to mom and dad, Mendoza. What a great job they've done raising fine young gentlemen. Game was in Georgia Tech, right? Georgia Tech plays Bobby Dodd Stadium in Atlanta, where Deion played. And their starting quarterback at Colorado, Julian Lewis, Juju Lewis, a five-star from Georgia. Ton of support for Colorado in the stadium. And they went absolutely nuts when Juju threw a game-winning touchdown to beat Georgia Tech 14-13 in that Big 12 ACC matchup. Deion Sanders, after the game, saying, quote, "I never flinched, man. I told people on the sideline, we're going to make it very interesting, but we're going to win this game." So congratulations to Deion on never flinching on that game-winning drive. A couple of Big Ten teams in action last night as Minnesota beat Eastern Illinois 59-7. Their uniforms look so sweet this year. And the University of Massachusetts went into Piscataway, New Jersey, and beat Rutgers 37-21 in a game that wasn't even that close. Rutgers starts off with a touchdown pass to their all-world receiver, K.J. Duff, who finished the game 9 receptions, 196, and 3 touchdowns. It certainly wasn't enough, because after that first touchdown from Rutgers, they trailed 30-7 in the third quarter. And, of course, that was all she wrote. They get a couple garbage time touchdowns, including like a 78-yarder from Duff, who's a legit dude. But when we look at the talent level coming out of the state of New Jersey, the fact that that school, which has some things to work, like they can work with it. They've got a stadium, a home stadium, the Scarlet Knights. They could have a sweet logo. Like the first ever college football game, there's history there. Pump some money into this thing, man. Where is the money? There's just no interest on the East Coast for college football. I just don't get it. Change the name to Jersey State, pump some money into that thing. But when you look at Maryland and you look at Rutgers, they're just an embarrassment to Big Ten football. I mean, what a, I just hate moves like that that were so transparent at the time and have never paid off for anything. And even when you bring the only guy who's ever won back there and a guy I like in Greg Schiano, you still can't get it done with all that in-state talent. It's ridiculous. Let's move on. Tonight, Friday night, we got some games here to look forward to a little bit, right? We get to see Miami playing at Stanford. Not going to be a game, but we get to see Darian Mensah make his debut. And I'm really excited to see a lot of this quarterback mobility, these guys making their first starts, seeing what they look like. So I'll be tuning into that for a bit, a couple series, but I'll be focusing on Fresno State at USC. Now, whether the fans come or not this week to USC, this is a team I'm keeping a close eye on. Watched them in game one, and, you know, there was some impressive stuff, some average stuff. The defense got a little out of position here and there. Did they look tighter? They got a tougher opponent, that's for sure. And I want to see some of their freshman studs as we bring up the picks of the week while we go through this. So definitely a 23.5 point favorite. I'm taking USC in the cover on that game. We've also got Oklahoma at 8. I get to see John Mateer in the Sooners, so I'll probably check out the Sooners. But it's Toledo at Michigan State. In Pat Fitzgerald's debut that I really want to watch tonight, I'm big on Pat Fitzgerald at Michigan State. I will be polling for Michigan State most of this year because I want them to be the supreme team in the state of Michigan. I like it when that's the case. Go green, go white. But as a 10-point favorite against the Rockets, I'm taking the Rockets in those 10 points because the Rockets usually give the Big Ten hell, and it's the first game. Actually, Toledo's got a first-time head coach as well. But you got Toledo in the, you know, the city that the Ohio-Michigan War was fought over, going up to Michigan to play. We're going for Toledo. We're pulling hard for Toledo. Let's move into this Saturday for the games that I think are the most interesting in each time slot, or the games, I would normally phrase this, that I'll be watching in each time slot, but I won't be this week as I'll be at the stadium for the Buckeyes game. But with so much quarterback movement, we got some ones that I definitely want to check out, including the Indiana game, as Indiana plays a trash opponent in North Texas. But I do want to see what Josh Hoover looks like in that offense with Andrew Marsh and Charlie Becker. They're a 40.5 point favorite. I feel the same way about Alabama, who hosts East Carolina at noon. Keelan Russell won the starting job. Keelan Russell was one of the top three quarterbacks in the 2025 quarterback class with Bryce Underwood and Tavian St. Clair. I want to see Keelan Russell as a 28 point favorite against a usually pretty game East Carolina team from Tuscaloosa. Then we've got Miami, Ohio. Miami, Ohio is one of the only teams in the MAC that spends decent money on NIL, like $10 million bucks on NIL. So they're pretty talented. and they're going to Pitt to take on Pat Narduzzi and the Panthers, who were good last year but lost some pieces. A 16.5-point favorite is Pitt. I'm not so sure if this one's not worth tuning into. Could be pretty interesting. Also, another kind of fun one is we've got Youngstown State going down to Kentucky in Will Stein's first game. Offensive coordinator Mike Yurcich at Youngstown. The Penguins getting 23.5. We've also got 23rd-ranked Houston taking on Oregon State. And just a 15.5-point favorite is Houston. I'm taking Houston and giving those 15.5 points. Let's go to the 3:30 time slot. One of the most exciting games of the week, maybe one of the most exciting matchups in a week that doesn't have many. We got Boise State going to Oregon. It's so exciting because Boise State and Oregon, always an entertaining game. While it feels like they've played a lot of times, they've only played four times in history. And Boise State is 3-1 against Oregon. And remember, Oregon's one win was in 2024, their first year in the Big Ten, the season opener, and Oregon's line looked like trash. And it was like, okay, these guys aren't going to be very good this year. Of course, they ended up going on to beat Ohio State, take over number one, and then lose in the Rose Bowl to the Buckeyes. But that game, Oregon needed a couple special teams plays, big ones, to win that game against Boise State. Boise comes in this year. I don't know how good they are. Honestly, you never really know. Even with talented teams. Penn State and Clemson had talent. But Boise State, no idea. They're getting 24.5 from Oregon. I think Oregon's going to be awesome this year. But if that was a competitive game, it certainly wouldn't surprise, as Boise not scared to go in there and play them at all. Now, one of the more competitive games of the weekend is Dave Aranda and the Baylor Bears and DJ Lagway, now their quarterback, at Auburn. Auburn, coached by Buckeye Alex Golish from Dublin, Ohio. There is no team in the SEC that I will be pulling harder for than Auburn. There's no team in the country outside of Ohio State this year that I will be pulling harder for than Alex Golish and Auburn. This guy is a dude, man. You want to talk about Ryan Day's potential successor, bringing up James Laurinaitis, Brian Hartline, Eddie George. I don't ever hear Alex Golish's name in the mix, but it ought to be, because right now he's the most successful of any of them. Also a guy that Jim Tressel, I'm sorry, I'm not counting Marcus because Marcus is never coming. Also Jim Tressel calls him one of his guys, and that's important. Jim Tressel, vote of approval, calls him one of my guys. He's one of his guys. I'm all in. That's our guy at right now. If you got to make that decision tomorrow, like for me, it's Alex Golish. Auburn, a 7-point favorite at home against Baylor. And War Eagle will take the Tigers minus 7 points. The Buckeyes' opponent next week, the Longhorns, they take on Texas State at 3:30. Texas, a 30.5 home favorite. I think, like the Buckeyes, the Longhorns put the pedal to the metal. -30.5. I'm taking the Horns to cover. Then we've got Marshall at Penn State. Now, this is Penn State's big out-of-conference game. Marshall, the battle of the we are's, right? Marshall says we are. Penn State says we are. Who owns we are? We'll find out tomorrow in Happy Valley for Matt Campbell's first game. A 24.5-point favorite are the Nittany Lions, and there is nothing interesting about this Penn State team to me at all, other than it's Matt Campbell's first team at Penn State. You got all these Iowa State players. Like Landon told us the other day, this is the biggest one team moving to another team that we've ever seen, 25-some players or something, which is just insane. But are these players talented enough to win in the Big Ten? All these questions we got about Penn State, not going to find out any of them tomorrow. But can this offense put up a lot of points? Marshall supposedly got a pretty good quarterback, pretty experienced wide receivers. They might be able to hang with them. So give me Marshall and all 24.5 of those points. In the biggest game of Saturday in the primetime spot, I'll be home for this puppy, as Clemson goes to LSU after the battle of the we are's gets settled for the battle of who is the real Death Valley. The answer, of course, if we're just talking like legitimately, it's Clemson. Now, theirs isn't as exciting, but theirs was first, and LSU stole the name as a joke or a kind of a burn, and then it stuck. I don't appreciate that. Clemson is the original Death Valley. Dabo Swinney earlier this week taking a shot at Lane Kiffin and LSU, saying that the pursuit of these NFL players is kind of embarrassing and we'll just stay in our lane. He said no pun intended, but we know there was. Now, schematically, Lane Kiffin and his staff are going to run circles around Dabo, in my opinion. And they're also a more talented team, but just a 10-point favorite at home. Clemson still gets a lot of respect, even though they're unranked right now, because they should be unranked. And it's just tough for some people to think of them as what they used to be before Dabo came there, which was a pretty good ACC team some years and pretty average some years. But that's exactly what they are today. And I think they should probably be more like a 14-point underdog in this one. While I'd like to take Clemson, I just think LSU is going to do them away pretty good, as they're going to have a big-time home opener start with Sam Leavitt in a really big debut that's going to kind of kick off a, hey, should we be talking about Sam Leavitt for Heisman-style campaign? Kyle Whittingham on NBC with his Smelvereens taking on Western Michigan. And who doesn't want to see what that looks like with Bryce Underwood in his first game of year number two? Do we see the happy feet? Do we see the rocket balls nonstop? Is there any touch? What does Savion Hayter look like? I can't wait to see these guys. Definitely I'll be watching that. 27.5-point favorites are the Smelvereens. And then we've got the late game at 10:30 on ESPN, an absolute banger, as Bob Chesney and UCLA go to play Tosh Lupoi and Cal. 1.5-point favorite is UCLA. Give me the Bruins all day. Let's go Bruins. I think, guys, I just ordered a couple more helmets. Look, it was my birthday. I was spending money. I think I ordered Iowa. I ordered, I think, UCLA. I ordered Miami. Check this out. So behind me, I got a Florida State helmet that has Jameis Winston's autograph on it. Certificate of authenticity. And that brand new Jameis Winston autographed Florida State helmet cost me half the price of what a normal new Florida State helmet would cost. And I found the same with a Miami helmet because it had Antrell Roll's autograph on it. 50% off of a brand new helmet because it had Antrell Roll. But we got Iowa, the worst uniforms in all of football because they straight up just got permission to wear, but said, we just want to wear that exact uniform of the Pittsburgh Steelers because, well, they're good. So then we'll then look tough and good too, which I think is just the most Bush League thing I've ever heard. But we got that Iowa helmet, which is not a Steelers helmet and is a pretty cool logo. That's coming. UCLA is coming. But a couple of more games. Now, remember, we've got football on Sunday this week. And who else are we rooting for this year as Buckeye fans? I would put forward that we're all rooting for Louisville, aren't we? Lincoln Keenholz and Louisville, ranked number 24 in the country, will go down and play Ole Miss. And Lincoln in the Cards just getting 6.5 points. Like, they think this is going to be a touchdown game. I would love that. I'm certainly pulling for Louisville to win the game outright. But when it comes down to our wallet and our official picks, I'm going to have to go with Ole Miss minus that 6.5. We've also got at 4 p.m. that day, the Apple Cup and Washington, taking on Washington State and Jed Fish's third year now at Washington, which is a 23.5-point line. I'm not messing with it, but that'll be maybe a fun one. And then we got Wisconsin at Notre Dame. We got Luke Fickell and Marcus. And how about that? Boy, I didn't even talk about Luke Fickell when I was talking about the coaches. That used to be a hot conversation piece. Nobody even would consider that anymore. But those two, obviously, at one point were incredibly close. I heard Fickell talking. Actually, it was at Big Ten Media Days. I think it was Ohio State. Was it Ohio State? No, it was a Notre Dame reporter. A Notre Dame reporter, right when he started his press conference, was like peppering him with questions nonstop about Marcus. And he was like making it clear, I'm here to talk about Wisconsin. But because of this game, she just kept asking questions about what their relationship's like now, et cetera. And it didn't sound like it's too, like it's a bad relationship, but like they're not close. Like they don't speak much is the way it sounded to me. At any rate, man, that could be a fun one with Wisconsin finally having a quarterback, Colton Joseph. Let's hope they don't lose their quarterback in game number one of the season for the third straight year. We know Wisconsin has a good defense. We'll get to see CJ Carr throwing potentially to some former Ohio State wide receivers. Going to be a fun one. So I'm interested in that Notre Dame-Wisconsin game there. But I'm going to take Wisconsin in all 20 and a half of those points because I think the defense is going to keep them in it. So there we go. There's our picks of the week. We got USC minus 23 and a half, Toledo plus 10, Houston minus 15 and a half, Auburn minus 7, Texas minus 30 and a half, Marshall plus 24 and a half, LSU minus 10 and a half, Ole Miss minus 6.5, and Wisconsin plus 20 and a half. For our Juckeyes best bets of the week, which we will track this year. We did not last year. We did the year before. We finished 14 games above 500. That was probably my best year ever. Last year, we didn't track. We didn't even play the whole season out because we were most assuredly not over 500 early. And I think I said, I'm done for the year. I'm not gambling anymore. Anyway, I appreciate you guys. I think what we'll do is potentially on Sunday, maybe do. So obviously, like I said, we're going to do the live post-game show from the field on the Buckeye Insiders channel an hour after the game tomorrow. And then Sunday, what I would normally do is then, even in a normal week, I would come on and do a live post-game show and then do a more detailed one after the game, which I'd usually air like Sunday. I think then Sunday could potentially be like a live show at like 10 or 11. So we'll see, hopefully. I might just be whooped, man. I might be really whooped. It's a really long day. I'm leaving the house at 6 a.m. tomorrow to head down, and then I might end up getting home a little later than expected, and then I want to watch some football, and, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I'll probably be pretty amped up. Yeah, it's going to be awesome, man. Cannot wait. We're finally here. The long national nightmare is over. We got Buckeye football back, baby. Appreciate you guys. I'll talk to you soon. Go Bucks!